One, two, three, four. Just another day at my dead-end profession. I'm living day to day. And listening to some good old country records on the radio. Hell, yeah, what else can I say?
All right. Hello, folks. Do not adjust your audio. This is not the gravelly voice of Ryan Shores introducing the Degenerate Podcast.
Maybe I could do some post-production work on that. Get you nice and raspy over there.
I could smoke a couple packs of cigarettes
on your way in. Yeah, you really didn't prepare well for this episode, Dave.
I should gargle with whiskey, something. I don't know. Shores is not here. It's just me and you, sound guy Bobby Timothy, holding down the fort. Shores, for those of you that don't know, they released that Pokemon Go app.
He got lost on the way in.
There's a shit ton out on the East Coast. So he got a plane ticket out there. He's catching a bunch of Pokemon. You should sign up for his team. He's going to dominate this shit. Bobby, are you getting into this thing or no?
No, I'm not. I'm not either. I'm not a gamer. I would not be into it. Very, very interesting, though, that Shores is gone. He's gone on tour, of course, on the East Coast. So good luck to him. You know, as a comedian, it's always nice to go on the road and go do some work in different cities.
Yeah, and it's actually some really nice dates, too. It's not like a lot of guys will go on tour and it'll be like a couple of crap shows at some shit bars. These are actual legit shows at nice clubs.
I will be playing a half hour outside of Buffalo, New York.
I'll be panhandling outside of somebody else's show, just reading some of my tweets, hoping to gain some fans.
We actually did a small show last night. Dave, you and I did.
Speaking of crappy bar shows.
That was interesting. It was, in a way, it was almost the most ingenious bringer show ever, because it was for a UFC fight, and we got told, come on out to the UFC fight, you'll get in for free.
Right, we were going to do comedy after the fights, which, based on my experience, I've done it a few times, that's a really bad spot.
It's literally never worked.
Yes, because the crowd has just watched some exciting fights. It's not exactly a comedy demographic anyways.
Everybody's wasted.
Right, and they're all just excited about the fights they just saw, talking about what they saw, what's going to happen next, whatever. So,
and they're tired. They just shut up for 3 hours to watch people hit each other. They're not going to shut up for another 2 hours to listen to you talk.
Yeah, and at a regular comedy show, even at a nice club, there's something called the check spot. It's toward the end of the show when the servers are dropping off checks, and it kind of kills the energy in the room.
Mm-hmm.
It distracts everybody because now they're looking at their bills. So the check spot is like the bad part of the show towards the end. Doing a comedy show after the UFC fights, that's like the check spot of comedy shows.
I know, but see, here's the thing. This is what a UFC fan I am. I was just so excited about going to watch that for free that I was like, yeah, absolutely, I'll do that show.
Yeah, the guy who set it up said that us comics could go for free. Normally, it's $5, I guess, for everyone else. But we could go for free. If we brought someone with us, they'd have to pay the $5.
It was $10 normally, but he could get our friends in for five bucks, and we would get in for free.
Okay.
We got there, and the guy's like, yeah, it's going to be $10. And I was like,
no, we're comics. He's like, yeah, no, still $10.
Yeah, he's dead $10. And I was like, but I've never paid to be on a, this is like the weirdest bringer show experience ever.
He told us to come for free. We didn't get in free. So he basically stacked the audience with people by telling him, I'm sure he didn't do it on purpose. He's a good guy.
He's a great guy. I love him to death. The bouncer had a great compromise. So I was like, I'm not going to pay to go perform. And he's like, all right, tell you what, the owner really wants me to collect it. I'll collect it now when the guy gets here to talk to me. If he works
we'll see if we'll work something out.
We'll give it back
to
you.
Tentative $10 cover.
Right. Yeah. It was let me hold your $10 cover.
Yeah.
And
but the funny thing about that to me as well was, as he was getting our money, we were sitting at a table watching the TVs. As he was getting our money, I asked him, I said, well, as long as we got to pay, are you guys doing any drink deals for us for the comics? He says, oh yeah, we are. What do you want? Oh, I'll take a whiskey ginger. And then my friend sitting across from me is like, I'll have a water. So he never brought us our drinks. Like, we didn't notice for like 20 or 30 minutes. Like, oh, that guy never brought us the drinks we asked for.
It was great. We did end up eventually getting our seats bought back from us for the $10.
He came up to us with a proposition. He said, I'll refund your money if you stand to watch the rest of the fights.
And eventually we just moved to another booth, which was even better. It was fantastic. I was hoping we could keep chaining it together and get him to give us an extra $10 to move out of that booth and then start really making some money on it.
Another funny part, before he gave us the proposition of buying our seats back, the owner of the bar came by as we're watching the fights, noticed when we're drinking. He said, hey, you guys, are you drinking tonight? You want something to drink? I said, oh yeah, we're comics. I understand you do drink deals for us. He said, yeah, you get a free drink during the comedy show, but right now it's just regular prices, which was cheap, so not a big deal. So okay, cool. I'll have a whiskey ginger. And my friend, and as I was about to say a water for my friend, he interrupted me. The owner said, oh no, you got to come back to the bar to order. So you just asked me if I wanted to drink.
He was just more of inquiring on a friendly basis, like, "Hey, are you a person who is thirsty?" Not as an employee of this bar
over here, 10 feet away.
He's more of a problem solver than he is an employee. He's just announcing when thirsty people are around that there is venues for them to get drinks.
The nice part of when they bought our seats back from us, though, when he handed us the $10, it felt like we were getting paid for the show.
It did. Maybe that should be the new comedy thing from now on. When you're a comedian, you have to pay up front, but you get the money back later.
You get your money back. Because it does feel nice to get some money. Even though it's yours, it feels nice to be handed money.
Dave, I had a semi-vigilante moment the other day.
This surprises me not at all. Wait, before we get to that, my favorite part of the show, while I was on stage doing my 10 minutes of comedy to a mostly disinterested crowd, the bar was literally right next to the stage.
Yeah.
So I sat at the bar.
Let's correct stage. It was a pallet with a piece of plywood nailed to it.
Yes, the stage. So I went and sat at the bar with the microphone and sort of told my jokes from the bar. 3 times during my 10 minutes into the microphone, I asked if I could get a drink. 3 times I was summarily ignored.
Dude, maybe he read like that pickup artist book, The Game, and he's just trying to he's trying to make you want the drinks, but he's not going to give it to you.
The very last time, towards the end of my set, as I was getting ready to wrap up, I turned to the bartender who was on the other side of the bar from me. I could have reached over and touched him. I said, "Can I get a whiskey ginger?" Again, speaking into the mic. He kind of shrugged his shoulders at me and turned away.
I mean, you really took during the show to be literal when he said you could get one drink during the show. You took that literally.
So I never got my drink, so that was great. But it was a weird show. It was a weird crowd. Let's talk about your vigilante justice moment.
Oh, yeah. So this was great. It's not quite vigilante justice, just something like it. Those of you who listen to Adam Carolla know that he's a big proponent of turning left on a red. Like, if you have a green light but a red arrow, like, you should turn left on it, which is true. You should proceed the way you would if you had just green lights. You know, you proceed with caution. You don't cut anybody off. But you can turn left across that intersection if it's clear. Just like, I mean, look, green arrows didn't actually exist a couple
until
decades
the Justice
ago.
League.
Right. Until a few decades ago. And so if you have those on a regular, not a huge, giant intersection, you know, turn left on them.
Disclaimer, Bobby is not a lawyer. He's not an expert of traffic law.
Not at all, but I'll tell you what did happen. I've got one by my house that's insanely dangerous. It is a left turn, kind of like onto my street, and on either side, cars are going 45 miles an hour. Cars are going 45 miles an hour on your right, going right by you. Cars are going 45 miles an hour on your left against traffic right next to you. There's no median. There's just a painted line, not even like one of those wide 3-foot lines, just a painted line. So there's 6 inches between cars going 45 miles against you and 45 miles an hour the other way. And you are sitting there, and there's been a bunch of accidents of people just sitting there and somebody's texting and they drift 4 inches over, which is all it takes, and hit somebody.
Right.
So I don't sit there. I will stay there until it's safe, and then I'll make a left turn if I have a green light and a red arrow. So I did that the other day, pulled up, parked my car, started getting out. This dude comes walking up to me. From his look and everything, I could tell he was a cop, even though he was in plain clothes. And I was like, "Oh, God damn it!" And he came, like, "Excuse me, sir. Sir, I'd like to ask, sir, why did you just turn left on that red up there?" And then I logically explained. I was,
"Oh my God, hang on, just a second. He is Bobby, and you are the perpetrator. That's what's happening right now."
You're right. And you know what? Here's the problem is I think like me. I'm like, "Oh, okay. He saw an injustice. He just wants to make sure everything's good. I'm going to inform him that I was acting in the safest possible manner. And then we'll high five and we'll watch the MMA fight later." But I forget that sometimes cops don't run on that circuitry. But right. So he's like, "What did you do it?" And I explained to him very calmly. I was like, "Oh, well, you know, if you see over there, that's a really dangerous intersection to sit at. So I waited for it to clear out and I proceeded as if it was just a green light, you know, without the red arrow, because it's much safer that way. And I, quite frankly, I drive a 1,500 pound car. I would get demolished if somebody hit me. It would be unsafe. It's an unsafe position to be in." And he looked at me kind of bewildered, and he was like, "It's the law. Like, you have to do that." And I was like, "Well, I mean, look, it was for safety's sake. You know, I did it because it's not a safe thing. But I understand what you're saying. I get that you clearly live in this neighborhood. I understand that. I don't want to disrespect you. I don't want you to feel like you have to drive home every day and see somebody breaking the law in your own neighborhood. I can understand how, as a cop, that would be hard. So out of respect for you, I'll tell you I won't do that anymore." And he's like, "No, not out of respect for me, because it's the law." I was like, he's like, "You should follow the law because it's the law." And I was like, that's man, you should hear about the Nuremberg trials because you're a bit behind. So he didn't like that. And then,
hilarious.
Well, you know, it,
now I want to look it up to see if you can turn left on a red arrow if it's green.
You
can't look it up.
But I mean, here's my argument is you can do anything. You can break any law if it's for your own safety, if you need to. And
well, in this, safety is subjective in this particular scenario.
Maybe. Like, he had the greatest, like, dumb cop guy analogy. Like, here's the problem. I always just think people are kind of smart. This is, I give them too much credit, and he clearly wasn't. And he goes into, he's like, listen, you can't just choose the laws you want to obey. And I was like, yeah, I wasn't just choosing. I wasn't just going because I was bored. I was going because it was the right thing to do. He's like, you can't. The other day, I parked with just my bumper in a red, and when I came out, I had gotten a ticket. And guess what? I have to pay that ticket. I don't get to choose what I want to do. And I just looked at him and was like, yeah, no one's arguing that. That's not an apt analogy. What are you talking about? Like, of course, yeah, you parked in a red. That's different. That's clearly not the case. And it was so funny to watch his face because he looked so bewildered. And I think it's because he's used to pulling people over and giving the lecture and just getting the yes, sir. And I was very respectful to him. I mean, I'm usually very respectful to cops, especially when I think that they're just trying to do their job. And so I was kind of given the, yeah, totally, I get it. I'm going to respect you and not do this anymore. But no, I don't agree with your crazy legal stance of you should follow something just because it's a law. And I just kind of started walking away. And you could tell he's not used to having people just randomly walk away when they decide they're done talking to him. And so he kind of continued to follow me a little bit and continued to talk about like him getting a ticket and in being an apt analogy. And as we're walking in the same direction. He's going back to his car, which again, he was behind me. He just pulled over to come lecture me.
Right.
He was driving a car with no rear license plate or rear registration whatsoever and had parked in a handicap spot to come talk to me. And as we were walking back, I was about to be like...
At which point you turn the table.
Yeah.
Like, citizens arrest.
I was about to be like, so your whole laws are laws, can never break them thing. How's that work? Because you're not on duty. You don't actually have the legal right to park in a handicap zone to come lecture me. So
that is fucking hilarious.
Laws are laws. I was like, but I didn't want to push it too far, so I just let him go. But it was a great moment of vigilante justice where you realize sometimes, oh yeah, sometimes they're just dumb. Like sometimes you tell that to there's plenty of police officers. When you tell them that, they'll be like, yeah, you know what? You're totally right. I've seen a bunch of accidents there. That's a shitty intersection. Make sure you do it where you don't hit anybody and don't do it in front of me anymore. And yeah, you're fine. But then there's the guys who are like, that is the law.
Right.
Laws must be followed. They're written down. How are you going to? They're written down. You have to follow them.
And I would argue that a lot of police probably don't know all the specific traffic laws. There's a lot of them. I just found out myself. I was looking up turning left on a red on a one-way street.
Yes.
There's a particular spot. I'm here all the time and in this one spot, and people don't turn, and it drives me fucking crazy. But I was looking that up, and in the course of my research, I found that you can do a U-turn over a double yellow line.
Really?
Yeah. It's you have to have 200 feet of visibility towards oncoming traffic.
I thought you could never cross a double
yellow line. No, you can do a U-turn over. I found that out. Just looking it up. That's what I'm saying. So maybe you're right. Maybe you can turn left on a red arrow if it's green.
No, I don't think you can, but
he admitted guilt. Bobby admitted guilt.
Dude, I don't live my life by what the law says. I do what is right and just. As I gave the cop this example because he's like, no, you got to do what's in the law. And I was like, listen, if we are driving on the freeway and I'm going 65 miles an hour and I'm going down a hill and there's an 18-wheeler truck behind me that's also going 65 miles an hour and they lose their brakes and now they're careening out of control, I'm not going to sit like an asshole driving 65 miles an hour as it runs me over because I don't want to break the speed limit. I'm going to go ahead and speed up and get out of the way, and I'm going to go ahead and turn left on that arrow.
Another crazy traffic thing, just minor, what a tangent, whatever. I just found out that a lot of red curbs in this city
are painted by people.
Right.
Yeah.
And apparently there's like the city has no map of what's actually supposed to be red, so they have no fucking idea. People just paint the curb red because they don't want people parking there.
Yep.
That's crazy. That's fucking insane.
That happens in my neighborhood a lot, actually. And you can always tell because it's kind of a shittier version of red. They got the RC Cola version of red, and it just doesn't work out.
Dude, your neighborhood's pretty shitty for parking, too. But in my neighborhood, people are such – this is like one of my vigilante things. I've never confronted anybody over it. But like when people take up two spots on the curb with one car, I lose my shit. I want to go out at night with a can of white spray paint. I want to mark spots along the curb and say, this is where a car fits.
Yeah, I think the best one I've ever seen do that is a bunch of people at SDSU nearby where I live. That had happened where somebody had managed to not only take up two spots with like one car, but they did it in such a way that their car was taking up two spots and sticking out into the street 3.5 feet. And so what these guys did is there's like a whole fraternity of dudes up there, and they literally went out and moved the car yeah. like picked it up and just kind of moved it over so it was still sitting in the street as if somebody had just gotten out of it when it stopped driving.
That's great, because I was picturing they would move it towards the curb. They moved it away from the curb.
Yeah, they moved it away from
That's
the curb.
That's fantastic.
And they just sat it there, and then eventually, obviously, a cop comes by and is like, well, this you can kind of tow this shit.
Oh, that's so good. I love it.
Oh, man. Hey, speaking of interesting shows, Dave, sorry you couldn't make it, but Ryan and I were recently out on San Nicolas Island.
Yeah, you guys were on the island.
We got to go out there with Patrick DeGear and DJ Cooch and one of my favorites, Sam Tripoli, who's, of course, a podcast legend, stand-up comedian legend. And it's great, too, because you get the experience, especially for me and Ryan. I know Ryan's a bit more experienced than I am. But when you go out there and you're dealing with Patrick DeGear, DJ Cooch, Sam Tripoli, these are all guys who have been national touring headliners for 15-plus years.
Right.
You know, these are guys who have it figured out. And what's great is most people like that that are... I shouldn't say that because I don't have a lot of experience, but a lot of people like that will big time you. You know, they'll
Oh, yeah.
You're the opener. You're the feature. All right, go get a drink, and then we'll talk later.
That's cute. You think you can tell jokes.
Right. Don't bother me. Right. And or just like, okay, cool. Shake your hand of like, okay, I've met you, and then walk away and then never talk to you again. Dude, these guys were fucking awesome. I mean, I've known Patrick for a bit, but the other two guys, they're just so awesome in being able to sit down and talk to you, A, like you're a person, B, like you're a friend and a coworker, and then C, give you a bunch of advice.
Yeah.
And I now think San Nicolas Island is the place where you go to get comedy advice, because Zoltan gave me some of the best advice of my career there. Sam Tripoli sat me down and gave me some great advice.
It's like the boat in Scientology. They take you out there to level up.
It's true, because it's in the middle of nowhere. You have to get on a separate plane. You have to go through a military base to do it. Funny story that you're going to hear about, because we did do
a podcast. They confiscated your nunchucks?
First of all, they would never find my nunchucks. Second of all, I'd like to see the dead man who tries. No, funny story, you do have to get all these clearances to get on the island because it's a military base.
Right.
And we recorded a podcast there, very crappy audio that I want to warn you guys about.
Right.
But you have to get on a military base, get cleared, then go on to another military base, hop onto a plane that flies you to a third military base. And that's like kind of the way it goes. We had sent our paperwork in for clearance a while beforehand, but turns out Ryan wasn't cleared.
Ryan scrawled his on the back of a napkin and said, this should be good.
He filled out the paperwork fine. The Navy is just very slow and didn't pick it up. And it turns out Ryan has a past. And we did all our work, and they came out and they said, sorry, you can't come on the island. And there was a little bit of panic, because I drove up there and I was going to the island. So actually, you know, we're going to cut into some of that audio we recorded on San Nicolas Island. Again, apologize to the listeners. It's very poor quality, but it's fantastic because Sam Tripoli is there talking to us, has some amazing comedy advice, and has some really interesting stories. So we'll cut in and out. Dave,
are you going to leave the listeners hanging as to the nature of Ryan's checkered past?
I'm going to let Ryan tell it to you himself.
His hobo murders, things like that.
if you listen up, I'm going to let Ryan tell you the whole story himself. Here is me and Ryan and Sam Tripoli on San Nicolas Island.
You are listening to the Degenerate Podcast, a very special episode coming to you from an island that you're not supposed to know about. Neither are we.
That's right.
So anyway.
Really?
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
It's a secret military base.
It's secret.
It's a secret island?
It's restricted, so technically we're not allowed to come on here, though it's not a secret that it exists.
Oh, yes, it is. Anyway, I'm very, very happy. Number one, because Bobby's hotel room is far inferior to mine, which makes me very happy.
It should.
We are on a military base for a show. I am here with Robert Timothy. Dave could not join us, but our guest I'm very, very excited to have on. This guy is royalty in the world of podcasting. He has been a comic for, what is it now, 15, 20 years?
Yeah.
His podcast, The Naughty Show, is broadcast on Joe Rogan's Death Squad Network. This man is an inspiration to anyone that's ever done podcasting. Mr. Sam Tripoli, everybody. Thanks for being on, man.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. Anyway, first thing I have to mention, I know that I wasn't supposed to.
You're not supposed to, but nobody's here to stop you. So.
No, no one is, and I'm not going to get in trouble.
No.
I had a little bit of trouble getting on this island.
You did have trouble getting on the island.
Because some bullshit from 2011 came through, where they're like, nope, can't come on.
Well, what was great is we sent our paperwork in weeks ago,
right,
to get our clearances and stuff, and as you were as you were walking out, you came out so crestfallen from the place with this look, and you just looked at me.
The look when you find out Santa Claus isn't real, that was the look.
Precisely.
You had on your face.
Also, because I drove up there and I was clearly going to the island, so now even like you have to scramble and figure out what the fuck you're gonna do.
And by the way, there's some headliners on this show that I'm frankly trying to impress. Right. Anytime that I'm performing with someone further up the totem pole than me, like Sam, I'd like to make a good first impression. And the first thing he sees of me is me yelling at a man in a very tasteful Jesus T-shirt.
Yes,
those fucking charges were thrown out. Okay, yeah. they didn't even go to trial.
That is crazy, man. I caught a trial a while ago, and I was like, man, if this sticks, man, I'm done, dude.
What happened to you?
I got busted doing some stupid shit. You know, it was just, I used to party back in the day. It was a party bust, and it just got weird, and I was just, I remember, I don't even think my head shit. I think they took my booking picture, what's that called? Your mugshot. And I've been trying to find it. I can't find it.
That's your new headshot?
Yeah, well, because I have like this really great bad lighting. Like Armenian mohawk going on, but I'm crying because I'm like, what are the charges? Like, oh, they're felonies. And I'm like, oh, dude, if I get felonies, I can't go to Canada. I can't go to Australia. I can't go any of these places. You should get that looked at and cleaned up, dude.
I really should. And again, it did not go to trial. Let me explain what happened, because a few people like with us on this show have been like, what happened? I'm like, I'd rather not say. I'll fucking tell the audience right now. Okay, here's what happened. In 2011, I made the biggest mistake of my life. I called the cops on my ex-girlfriend.
Oh.
You don't call the cops on a chick, because that's not going to end well for you. So here's what happens.
I've actually just heard a bit about this.
No, you didn't. I misled the audience about what this was about.
So you used to be an MMA fighter? Were you an MMA fighter when this happened?
I was.
So this was like a Tito Ortiz, Jenna Jameson type weird relationship?
I'll tell you what happened.
Two knuckleheads?
I found out this chick was fucking around on me. Mm-hmm. And I kicked her out. I'm like, that's it. Pack your shit and go. I'm happy you're gone. Now, what she did was she said, fine, I'm going to go stay with Jesse, who I'm fucking. Now, what I should have said, and if I had said this, none of this would have happened. I should have said, good, the worst thing that I can implore on that bastard is you. Go. That would have been great. What I said instead, in my heat of anger, was...
I hope it's a Jesse's Girl reference.
You know that girl Kelly you don't like? I'm going to go see her. At which point she started destroying the apartment. Now, I thought, here's one thing I could do. I could restrain her, but then that would leave marks. So what I'll do is I will stand outside, I will let all my possessions be ruined, and I will call the cops. What could be a more responsible decision?
Waiting till she's outside of the door before you yell the thing about fucking the other girls.
Oh, that would have been better.
Yeah, that's way better.
Mm. Yeah, dude. So the cops come and
so anyway, so I'm sitting outside. I'm like, all right, she's in there. They're like, what's her name? For the purpose of this story, Berserker Face. Berserker Face. Does she have any weapons? Not that I'm aware of. There's a block of kitchen knives, but I don't think she has one. All right, we'll go in. We'll get her out of there. Thank you, sir. So I'm waiting. And then I'm waiting a very abnormally long time. Like, I kind of feel like they should have got her in the bracelets by now. They come out alone. I'm waiting for her to come out spitting and kicking, like, I'll get you for this! But they come out alone. I'm like, fellas, she's destroying my apartment. If you have a little intervention would be nice. They're like, turn around and put your hands behind your back. I'm like, why? I called you. They said, doesn't matter who called us. So I put my hand, and I'm like, what the... And the guy asked, the cop goes, so do you really know jiu-jitsu? And I stupidly went, yeah? And he went, that's why there's no marks. And So I got cuffed. Now, here's what happens for the next 3 weeks. I come home. She said, she plays me on speaker a message from the detective that said, in so many words, listen, I don't know why you're staying with this piece of shit, but I'm looking out for you. I know lots of girls that are hanging around with pieces of crap like this, but let me tell you this. If he even touches you, I don't care where he goes, I will find him. I will put a warrant out for his arrest. She hangs up that call and says, let me tell you what's going to happen. You will come home to this house every night. You will be allowed to go to work, but you come right home. If you leave me, if you do not come right home, I will tell him that you hit me and fled, and there will be a warrant. So I was blackmailed for 3 weeks, every night coming home. give me your phone. Okay, I'm putting this in my purse. If you so much as leave tonight,
what
he gets a call.
What a horrible situation.
You were literally a slave.
And I did not have so much faith in the legal system at this point. So I went, okay. And I sat there every night. And she talked to the other guy she was banging right in front of me. And I'm just like, if I walk out, I am fucked. So finally, I'm like, well, trial date's come. And she's like, well, I will drop the charges, but then we will go home and we will work this out. And I went, yes, ma'am. And as soon as she went in, she went, I'm not pressing charges. Like, we're not bringing it to trial. And she went, okay, let's go home, honey. I went, denied! And I fucking walked out of there. That's the last time I ever saw her.
Yeah, so that is why Ryan almost didn't make it to our show.
That's fantastic. He got it cleared up, though. He didn't have to, like, swim to the island.
And so here's the deal. So he comes out crestfallen, and he was like, oh, my God, I can't come on base. And Patrick was like, this has never happened in 16 years. This has never happened. And I grew up like a Navy brat, and so I kind of know the rules for the base. And I was like, okay, so are they denying you access to the base, or are they denying you clearance? And he said, and I went and I talked to the guy, and he's like, no, we're denying him clearance. And I said, so he still has access if he has somebody to escort him. And he's like, yeah, technically. So what that means is if an active duty military person escorts him onto the base, he's allowed to go. Problem is, they were saying, well, listen, even if you get to the other base where you take off on an airplane from and land, even if you do that, the person has to be on the plane with you and then also on the next base with you because he has to be escorted the entire time. And so I was like, all right, fine. Let's do this. Let's haul ass because our plane's going to take off soon to the base we need to go to take off from. Let's go there. We'll leave Ryan at the front gate. We'll drive in, find somebody in the airport who's willing to escort him. I'll pick that guy up and drive him back, grab Ryan, get him on base, and hopefully we can finish all of this in the next 30 minutes before our plane takes off. And we managed to throw that together, and it actually worked out pretty well. Got him on there and got
Sounds like
together.
The Hangover 4.
It is.
Like pulling a caper, trying to...
But it leads to my my assertion, which I was telling Ryan, because he was clearly very crestfallen once this happened. When he came outside, and he was just like, I don't know what this is. They never charged me. I can't believe it. I don't know how I'm going to get home. I took off work for this. And I told him, like, listen, just don't freak out. That's it. So much of life is not freaking out in bad times.
Oh, yeah. Agreed.
Here's the deal. Like, we could not have gotten him on the base if he was, like, going crazy. Like, oh, my God, I can't believe it. But if he would have put up even a little bit of a stink, they would have called ahead to the gate and been like, don't let this guy on. You know, now you not only lost your clearance, you can't get on to the base.
Right.
But because he stayed calm and was cool about it and just kind of like went with the solution, it ended up working out. Doesn't mean it's always going to work out, but that's really your best chance.
And also, it is a much more badass story now because now he can say he got personal military escort
right
onto a restricted island.
Oh, God. And the best part was the guy that we got him. So the guy turned out to be the bartender for the bar we were going to be performing at on the island. He's this older guy. He was retired military, but still obviously worked there and had his ID and everything. My favorite was that he had like really bad semi-racist jokes that he insisted on telling as I was driving him to pick Ryan back up.
Did he say you can use that in your skits?
No. Here's my favorite, though. He did say, he goes, what do you call a jackass with a tie on? And I was like, I don't know. And he goes, Obama. And then I was like, oh, okay. And then he's like, he goes, and then he pauses and he goes, you can say that for pretty much anyone. I was like, thanks for clearing up the specifics of that joke there, bud. And that would have been good enough. Again, I'm still in mission mode at this point. I'm like, I got to go get Ryan and get him. So I don't even take time to do much about it. Pick Ryan up as we're heading back to the airport with Ryan in. Obviously, Ryan's super grateful that this guy is taking him on. So he now repeats the exact same jokes to Ryan, the exact same jokes verbatim that he had told him.
Of course.
And Ryan
has to
mock laughter in the backseat of a Mini Cooper as we're spinning through a military base. And as we're going up, he does the Obama joke again. And then he pauses, and I was about to jump in on him and be like, you can tell that joke about pretty much anyone. Yeah. But he did it himself, verbatim.
Of course he did.
Verbatim.
Of course he did. He tells that at least once a week.
Right.
With the you can say about anybody line.
I think he was just so excited. He was more excited to be performing that duty than Ryan because he had a captive audience. You know, like he's like, nope, usually people tell me to fuck off when I tell him these jokes.
He's important now.
Yeah. Oh,
he's part
so
of
important.
Making this show happen.
So important.
He's a fucking rock star.
Oh, man, it was great. How crazy is that Ryan story? He literally, he became a slave. He became somebody's slave.
He was a captive. He was a captive for
3 weeks. 3 weeks of Ryan. That's what it was. How crazy is that?
It's like a modern-day Gilligan's Island.
I dare somebody to come up with a better ex-girlfriend story than that, because that's pretty goddamn... I have a lot of, like, crazy ex-girlfriend stories. That's pretty fucking hard to beat.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I have nothing even close to that. That's insane.
I got enslaved. I was enslaved by a woman with the help of a San Diego police detective.
I don't know. I 2011, technology is pretty much, you know, similar to what it is now. Back then, everyone had cell phones, shit like that.
Right.
I don't know. He should have recorded her saying something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. I mean, I guess. But even if she said, like, I'm going to tell him that, she could always go back and say, it doesn't mean it's not true. You know,
you lead her into it. Be like, what are you going to do? Oh, tell him he hit me. But I've never hit you. It doesn't matter. Ha! Now I got you. Something like that.
Yeah, he's not me. He's not going to set up a bunch of traps. I'll set up traps for a motherfucker. I don't think he's into it. He just resigned to his life.
You probably have traps set for people right now, including me and Ryan.
Absolutely.
That you're just in case.
Just in case, yeah.
Insurance traps.
If anybody ever turns on me, for sure I have insurance traps. Oh, man. Let's move on. There's some more. Dude, we did like an hour plus with Sam. Sam's so fucking awesome. He sat down with us at like 11 o'clock at night after doing a show on this island.
Oh, this was after the show?
This was after the show. And sat down and recorded with us in our shitty hotel room on shitty USB mics. And I was going to scrap it because the audio for my shitty USB mics is so bad. But he gives such fucking great advice. He's like, he gives such sage-like comedy advice. It really should be shared. So we'll cut back and hear some of what Sam's got to say.
Well, Sam, I want to get into you a little bit. Now, I know, very personal.
That sounded weird.
It was a super weird transition.
I mean, just the tip. You got a nicer shower than me. Not the point. So anyway, you start off in upstate New York. You moved into Las Vegas for college.
Yep.
After you're done there, you go to L.A. You become a regular at the Comedy Store, and then... What happens from there? Where'd you start at? Like, are you an open micer at this point? It was 2000 you became a comic, according to you.
No. Yeah. Right around 2000, man. That's really crazy. Yeah,
you're a millennial comic.
It's wild fucking really fast. But it was late. Yeah, No, man. I would say, wow, I've been doing it longer than I thought.
Well, this post.
Probably like around like late 1990s, like really late 1990s.
Okay.
I started. And
so Smash Mouth is big, Fred Durst is killing it, you're doing comedy.
Yeah, it was the end of greatness. I always say like the end of the early 90s was the end of greatness. And I remember where art changed, and it was such a weird moment, because I remember looking at it going, okay, this is... a sign of bad things to come. And it was when Britney Spears was on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine. And I remember going, oh man, this is not good. This is somebody who Rolling Stone magazine at that point had been like this real like respected journalist magazine. Here's Britney Spears, this very pop formulated, and I have none against Britney Spears, but you know, she represented this kind of manufactured thing. And I'm like, wow, she's on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine. And you can remember there's this whole shitstorm about her being on the cover. One, because she was so young, and two, they like were sexualizing her, like they were doing weird images of her.
They were putting her in 14-year-old images.
Like you could look up her skirt and stuff like that, and you're like, Jesus Christ! But it was like, here's the end of like art. I felt like it was the end of art. I remember that because up to like the late 80s, early 90s was. I feel like you could put that musical genre, that time, up against anywhere. You could really, like, you had the beginning of metal, grunge, hip-hop, rap. Everything was really going at that point. And then it just started going downhill. And then that's when the suits kind of took over and they were formulating people.
Now, what made you want to go into comedy? Because you were in Las Vegas in college. You majored in psychology.
I moved out to Vegas because I thought it was a great place to start comedy, and it is now, but it wasn't then. It was a horrible place to start comedy.
It's a good place to be really good at comedy.
Well, then it was, yeah, a little bit, but still, like, when I moved to Vegas, it was just, it started being a place where people wanted to go perform, because there was a stigma with Vegas, is that you only play Vegas when you were over the hill.
Right.
But now it's a place where it's like, oh, dude, you can go gig there, all the acts play there, and it's great, man, but I moved to Vegas because I thought it would be a great place to start doing stand-up, and when I started, there was one open mic every other week, and I just started... finding bars, and I would I would create my own shows, and I would host them, and I would be like an urban room where the host does like 20 minutes in between each comic, and I would just do huge amounts of time.
Now, Bobby and I are both fans of yours, so we know you majored in psychology.
That makes two.
No, I got a cousin in Antioch.
Three.
So you majored in psychology.
Yes.
Now, did your major in psychology influence comedy, or did comedy influence psychology, or the independent?
I got a degree in psychology because I liked the movie Silence of the Lambs and Basic Instinct.
Good reason.
I wish there was something deeper to it. I just liked it. I had to get a degree for my parents. They wanted me to do it. You know, hindsight, I had great times, but that's it. I mean, like, I white-knuckled it. I got through with a B-minus average because I don't ever remember doing homework. I don't ever remember doing homework ever. Yeah. I just kind of went through it, and as soon as I learned I wanted to be a stand-up comic, I just started doing stand-up. Yeah, man, and it just...
When did you find that out? What was the thing that tipped you off that this was your life goal?
I mean, I just did podcasts where I kind of talked about, but it was like I knew I existed. I wanted to be. Mm. I knew I wanted to be a stand-up before I knew there was a word for stand-up. I always wanted to be a comedian, even when I knew there was comedians. I always wanted to just make people laugh. I mean, first grade, kindergarten, I jumped up on the table, started telling jokes. I just always wanted to do it. I went to high school with the sole purpose of winning class clown. That's all I wanted to do. That's all I remember doing. That's all I ever wanted to do was be class clown.
Well, okay, so you go to L.A.
Yes.
What was the biggest hurdle there? Because I know it's very intimidating in L.A., even as an established comic, and you were coming in very green, so...
Oh, super green. I was a bar comic up to that point. I was strictly a Vegas bar comic. I'd only played one comedy club after that, and, like, every level of comedy, there's a different thing that works for that level. Like, open mics, you can be a lot more edgier because it's mostly comedians, so right. Their sense of humor is much darker than everybody else. Then, you know, I had this one bit called Stripper in a Wheelchair, and I was so blessed everybody loved it that it let me jump this whole group of, like, shit that you have to go through in L.A., and I went right to... I was the closer in the Bringer show. I would always close... I never had to bring anybody. I would just close out the show. And... Then I got picked up by Jay Masada at the time, even though I don't play the
He's the owner of the Laugh Factory.
He made me a regular without even showcasing.
Wow.
So I remember being that, and that was the first place to pick me up, and then the improv picked me up. And then after showcasing like six or seven times, it's so interesting, these young comics, they like showcase three times, like, fuck that place! And
yeah.
Like, Ari Shaffir showcased like 40 times. Like, Steve Simone was like a door guy there for like 6 years. I mean, like, insane shit people went through to get in there because, like, she was the queen. And it was an indie studio back then, so it was, like, very, like, you could get a lot of time learning, so...
See, even though I think the audio is horrible on that, his advice is literally too good to keep off.
It's fantastic. Listen, he's a great guy to talk to. I have never talked to him that in-depth.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he's just listening to him talk to you guys, like, super nice, super respectful. And like you said earlier, there's no sense of, like, difference in your guys' experience. You're just peers.
And even more so when we weren't even on the mic, you know, when we were hanging out, having dinner, or flying to the island, or doing any of that stuff.
Oh, that's when he was telling you guys what to call him and to ask him certain things.
You say, sir. No, it was totally chill. You're just hanging out with another comic. I love it when successful comics can just be another comic, you know? They don't need to big time you. They don't need to do anything else. And on top of that, are willing to sit down and give you great advice. Because I've said this before, there are three layers. There is... the guy who thinks he's too good for you, so he's either going to never talk to you, talk down to you, or just completely ignore you.
Oh, and I know that guy. I've tried to get booked on his shows. He's a piece of shit.
Right. Then there's the middle guy, which is actually, you know, still a nice dude, comes off just fine. He says hi. He's very nice, very sweet to your face, smiles, the whole nine yards. But he's never going to really get into it with you. He's never going to sit down and talk to you.
Right.
He doesn't have... either the caring about you or the balls to say, hey, bud, just so you know, you're a new comic. I'm an old comic to new comic. Here's what you should do to change things. Here is what you can do to make it better. Here's some experiences I've had. That is the last comic, is the guy who's willing to do that, to sit down and talk to you like you're a peer, to give you advice, to help you out, and to just shoot the shit. And that's exactly what Sam was. He gave some great advice to both me and Ryan on what to do with comedy, on what to do with our specific sets, how to play rooms like that, ways to direct things in in the future, our podcasting and everything like that. And I think it comes from that attitude that he had that you heard in that particular clip where he was saying, there are people who think they're entitled to be a headliner after a certain amount of time,
right?
Think they're entitled to this thing from comedy because right. I put the work in. You just featured three times. That's not a yeah. big deal.
And not only that, but I think there's so many of that person, the entitled comic, the yes. guy who thinks that easy. I think they have changed a lot of the Sam Tripoli types into the second type, like who don't engage with you.
That's probably true.
They get inundated with so many new green comics who don't know what the fuck they're doing, just hounding him for advice, hounding him to help, give me this, give me that,
mm-hmm.
that they probably just kind of shut down a little bit. Like, they're still nice, but they're not as willing to engage.
Well, and then like you said, you know, like he just brought up, there's a bunch of people who are really pissed that they're not doing super well because they've featured for three times. How well are they going to take criticism?
Right, exactly.
If they're already at the point where they're not looking into that and saying, okay, well, I featured three times, that's great, I want to go up to the next level, so I just have to keep doing better. If instead they're saying, I'm entitled to this and I haven't been given it, what are they going to say when Sam Tripoli comes up and says, hey, by the way, you might want to, you know, cut some of the needless words out of your set. I yeah. mean, that's great advice he gave to me. He's like, you have great jokes. I love your jokes. They went over really well. You have too many words. You're using yeah. too many words. You can cut eight down to four. And I was like, you're absolutely correct. That's exactly what's wrong with my set right now.
I told my first joke almost 10 years ago, and I haven't done comedy for the entire 10 years, but mm-hmm. most of it. I know a lot about comedy.
Yeah.
And the club that I work at, the comedy club I've been at for about 3 years now, especially recently when we've been doing 10 comic showcases on the weekends, I see hundreds of comics.
Right.
I know a lot about comedy.
Yep.
We have open mic every night, and I listen. I talk to the guys. I'll give them advice. I'll mm-hmm. hey, try this tag. Hey, change this. They almost never do.
Right.
Almost never.
And I wonder, have you ever had the experience of somebody actually getting mad at you? Of like, what the fuck do you know, old man? What are you trying to tell me?
Yeah, not so much. I mean, they're not that openly rude, but it's just that they don't take your advice.
Right.
They're like, oh, yeah, yeah, it's a good idea. Then they don't do it. I think too many comics believe that they want criticism, but what they really want is validation.
You have to be used
They'll
to
go
getting
up to be like, hey, what do you think of this? And instead of wanting criticism, they just want the person to say, that's really good.
That's right. You really do need to be open to criticism in this. I am lucky. I've been blessed by having a life full of criticism. People have criticized me my entire life. It does not hurt my feelings at all. I think of it as long as you look at it as a constructive thing of like, oh my God, you're right. Like when he said that, when he was like, listen, I love this joke you tell. This is a great joke. But look at your lead up. You had a 5-sentence lead up. You can do that in 2 sentences. Here's how. I was like, oh my God, you're right. And what does that do? That ups the octane of your set because you have more jokes per minute, you know, and it comes off much better. He's like, if you did that, that would be a killer set. And I looked back and I said, you're 100% right. It would be very easy for me to be like, well, fuck you, Sam Tripoli. You don't know how I'm doing comedy. I want it to be long setups.
It's not just that. It's like another trap that young new comics fall into is they're in love with all their words.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, I wrote this and this is so clever. They're so reluctant to abandon anything. It's like they feel like every word that they created is magical. They're kind of losing the forest for the trees, so to speak. Like,
yeah, and
they could get to a punchline better, get a bigger laugh,
mm-hmm.
but they're so proud of themselves for the 5-sentence lead up that they're not willing to cut that down.
And there's also the problem of, you know, some kind of support, whether it's a bringer show or just a good audience. You tell that joke in that long form fashion. Like, I've told those jokes for a long time and I've gotten great responses because the jokes work. That doesn't mean that they're perfect.
Right.
And people sometimes confuse it too. They're like, what does Sam Tripoli know? He doesn't know I told that joke 4 times last week and it killed. It may have killed, but you can still make it better.
Right.
And by making it better, it makes your whole set better.
And who did it kill to? Did it kill to a bringer room?
Yeah,
where
yeah.
Everyone laughs anyways?
Exactly.
Or did it kill to a show that's mostly comics where we laugh at each other because mm-hmm. we know each other? Like, holy shit, that's funny that he said that. You know, it's just, I saw Bill Burr here in San Diego about a year ago almost. He was at one of the casinos somewhere. He did an hour and 15, and it was all new shit I hadn't seen before. And as I was watching it, I realized, I'm like, every single sentence out of his mouth is a laugh.
Yes.
Like every, even the lead up is built for laughter. And like, that's such a hard thing to strive to, but it's like look at these professionals doing it.
Oh, and even better, he gave us some great advice. Before we actually did the show, I was talking to him and trying to solicit some advice and some things. And he's like, well, there are some stage tricks that you should be aware of that you should know and do. For instance, if you tell a joke that you know is good, but it did not hit and you just hear silence, don't go right into your next joke. Take a pause, take a comically loud breath, and then see if it works. I then watched him literally do this during the show, and it fucking killed. She told a hilarious joke. The audience didn't have time to process it. If it would have been me in my ignorance and my youth, I would have just gone through it and gone on to my next joke. Instead, he took a nice long pause, looked around the audience, took a deep breath. The joke sunk in. Everybody realized how funny it was and started laughing hysterically. I watched not just a master comedian, a master stage performer. And I think that's another thing that he does really well that younger comics can learn from is understand you are not just reciting jokes. You are doing a performance.
Right.
If you can find ways to make your stage performance better, it will make your jokes better.
There's comics who we know at the club, we know their jokes word for word because their rhythm and cadence never, ever changes.
Right.
We'll like say the jokes along as they're on stage saying it. That works for some people,
mm-hmm.
and that's fine, but you still want to tap into the energy of the room.
Right.
You know, if you're just going to recite jokes, that's cool. You can make a living doing that, but where's the fun?
Like last night. Last night when we were in a small bar performing on a pallet to a bunch of drunken UFC fans, if you just go into material, it's one of the things I've thankfully learned from guys like Zoltan, if you just go into material in shows like that, no one is going to go anywhere with
you. I suck at crowd work and I suck at riffing, so it was a really tough 10 minutes for me.
Right.
But I tried and I had a couple bright spots in there. You know, I wanted to touch on what you said about Sam taking a pause.
Yeah.
Like that is great advice. That was one of the best pieces of advice a friend of mine gave me years ago is I talk too fast on stage.
He's like,
give them pauses. The audience will fill the pause with laughter. And the thing that Sam said, if it doesn't hit, pause, take a breath. Open micers, they know about that, but they don't handle it properly. Because what you'll see at open mics is if a joke doesn't hit, they might pause for a second and they'll go, well, that sucked. Or they'll say, oh, well, I'm taking that out of the act. They'll change the laugh to, instead of letting the audience get the joke, making fun of it.
Yeah.
So you're still getting the reaction, but you're losing the essence of the reaction.
You almost have to let it ferment in that area and create the awkwardness that allows the audience to understand that they maybe missed something to go back in their head and then re-register the joke. And he was fucking masterful at it. Masterful. Yeah. And watching him do it, I saw, oh, this is exactly how you do what he's saying, because you're right. I have tried things like that before where I pause, and maybe it works a little bit for me, but to watch him pull it off perfectly by maintaining eye contact with the audience, taking a exaggerated deep breath, looking around as if, when are you guys going to catch up with me?
Yeah.
And with the confidence of knowing that it would work, I think that's what's different. He's done it so many times and seen it work that when he does it, he has the confidence to know, it's not that you guys aren't going to laugh. It's just you haven't realized you're going to laugh yet.
Right.
And I think too many comics, myself included, do it with the, oh God, I hope this works and I hope they laugh face, which is not nearly as effective.
Right. Yeah. Confidence on stage is a big thing too.
But yeah, I love what he talked about. You know, Ari Shaffir fucking 50 times before somebody decided to give him the main room. That is a great lesson too, because it's part of something like Owen Benjamin was saying when we talked to him. You got to be happy with what you're doing.
Right.
Your goal shouldn't be, I want to be this headliner who's selling at all the clubs. It should be, I want to do the best job I can do at the show I have tonight opening for somebody or at a fucking open mic, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I want to do the best job I can do. If you play it that way, you will be Sam Tripoli. You will be headlining eventually. You will have all that. But if your goal is just, man, I want to be him, I want to do this, then you're not doing the job you have right now.
Right.
And it is interesting how it ties in with his idea that the flow of art changed in the late 90s, early 2000s.
The death of art, I think he said.
Right.
Something like that.
And which is interesting, because I haven't heard that perspective before. I've always thought of the early 2000s as kind of the burgeoning of art, because it came with the internet blowing up and broadband becoming more popular throughout the world. I started seeing all of a sudden it wasn't just people high up in A&R that could make celebrities. It was people who had talent who could get themselves on the internet.
Yeah, it was definitely a double-edged sword, though, because like you now everyone can reach an audience.
Mm-hmm.
So people who are talented who didn't have an outlet before can get it. But also I definitely understand what he was talking about, this shift in – even though everyone has a chance to reach an audience, there's still the power brokers at the top are starting to manufacture things more.
Sure.
And you can definitely see that, and you could see that. And it was, like you said, I didn't notice it at the time, but looking back, you're like, oh, yeah, that was a weird moment.
That is when auto-tune came around.
When are we going to auto-tune Shores' voice?
Oh, my God, wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't it be great if we auto-tuned Shores' voice and he just sounded like an opera singer? That'd be fantastic. All right, let's go back and hear some more Sam Tripoli.
All right.
Now, Sam, let me ask you something. We mentioned earlier, for those of our audience that don't know, you are a forerunner in the field of podcasting. You're an innovator. You ran one of the first if not the first comedy sports podcast.
Yeah,
you were
literally one of the very first ones.
You beat to the punch some of the most prolific Adam Carolla, Mark Maron. You were there first. Now let me ask you something.
I think Maron was that before Maron? I think Maron was a little before Maron. Here's how it went. Carolla was the first, then Maron, then Rogan, then because of Rogan, Brian Redband started Death Squad, and then if you look at all the old Death Squad guys, Brian Redband literally created podcasts that would go on and form all these other, like, All Things Comedy has a lot of old Death Squad guys. What's the one? There's another cat one. Feral Audio. There's all these podcasts that are all the old Death Squad podcasts.
Now, but yours in particular, though, spawned a huge generation of podcasting, sports comedy.
Yeah.
I got to ask you, now, does it feel good that everyone spawned from you, or does it kind of feel like, what the fuck, that was my thing?
Well, it's always fine. I was thinking about Trailblazers the other day, like how... It's like always great to be called the Trailblazer, but the Trailblazer.
But it's never great to be the Trailblazer.
No, because right. It's the next guy that gets all the glory all the fucking time, if you really think about it, man. And it's like, no, I love that the podcast, and it still grows, but it sucks that, like, guys like, and I love him, and he's got great, like, Michael Rappaport just started a new sports podcast, and, like, Jim Norton and Matt Serra started a new sports podcast, and it just, like, everybody flocks to them. We've been doing this high-end, well-crafted show. So in a weird, it's cool, but it sucks to them because you wish you could enjoy the benefits of everybody getting to understand it. But I'm working on making a hub of a headquarters for all the best independent sports podcasts.
Yeah.
Where you can go and find the best. The way Sports Blog Nation was for blogs, where they got all the best bloggers and put them under one blog. I'm finding all these great sports podcasts and putting them under one umbrella, which is Punch Drunk Sports.
Punch Drunk Sports. Is that started yet or still working
on? Well, Punch Drunk Sports has been going for 4 or 5 years, but the podcasting, we're going to kick it off next week. I believe we got like a bunch of great names like Tom Segura, Adam Hunter. You know who did MMA Roasted. They got a whole bunch of great guys, and we're just going to build it. My goal is to get up to 20, 25 podcasts, so every week, every day, you can find 5 or 6 you might want to listen to and just figure it all out. Make it one fun place to go to.
How many times have you done Rogan's podcast?
Like 5 or 6.
Yeah, I first became aware of you from Rogan's podcast.
I haven't done it in like 2 years.
Yeah.
And it is, like, he's moving on to like world thinkers and like these great, like he's getting all the big guys. It's crazy.
When you did that the last time, did you see your podcast numbers just go through the roof? Because he notoriously has an insanely huge demographic.
Listenership. I mean like everything I do, there's a big Rogan element to it. Like, the guy is a taste, he's an influencer without a doubt. Like, mm-hmm. like everyone can say like the Comedy Store's changed because Tommy's gone, and they got these new managers, and the new managers are doing great jobs. But the reason the Comedy Store is jumping the way it is because Rogan came back.
Right.
When Rogan came back, Joey Diaz came back, and then all these guys are like, oh, maybe the Comedy Store's kind of cool. And they all came back, and they realized it's like this really cool, like, private club that everybody gets to hang out in. Like, you know? So, yeah, he's like, if he touched, I mean, look at Fire the Kid. Like, that.
Yeah.
That's huge because Rogan, you know, I mean, like...
I didn't know Brian Callen before he was on Rogan. I mean, since then, I see him every time he comes to town because he fucking kills it.
So again, one of my favorite things about getting to hang out with Sam Tripoli this whole time is learning a bunch of stuff about being humble even when you're at the top. I mean, a lot of people, Ryan touched on this a little bit, a lot of people don't realize he literally started comedy sports podcasts. Like, he was the first, and then everybody jumped on that bandwagon, and there are people like Jay Moore and stuff who have made a shitload of money on it. And if you talk to him, you would think he would be super bitter. Like, he's the guy. Like, imagine if you invented reality TV and then all of a sudden, you know, everybody else jumped on it and you didn't make any money. I'm sure he has made plenty of money on it, but certainly a bunch of other people have jumped on his bandwagon and used that to make their own success. And
we got a sense of that. I mean, he definitely didn't seem bitter, but you got a sense of it. He was like, yeah, it's It's cool being called the Trailblazer. It's not cool to be the Trailblazer.
Right, right. No, but that's my point. He can say that completely honestly without being the bitter old man, because right. he's not. And when you look at him, when you're like, so what are you going to do? Like, a lot of people would sit around and be like, fuck, I started this. I'm just going to rant online about how you guys are a bunch of hacks who stole my bit or everything. But no, he's like, no, no, no. Here's what I have going for the future. I'm starting a podcast network. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. Like, his whole thing is, yeah, that particular swing didn't connect, so I'm swinging again. I'm not right. giving up and walking off the plate.
Nice.
And I love that because, again, think of everybody, whether it's me, you, somebody who started comedy a year ago, or somebody who's thinking about starting comedy in 5 minutes. The main lesson to come out with that is a 15-plus year headliner, a guy who's done Rogan a bunch of times, a guy who's incredibly successful, and look at his attitude. It's not, I got this shit stolen from me, and therefore I'm pissed, and I'm just going to kind of be angry about it. It is, well, that particular thing didn't work out, and there's no way in hell I'm going to stop trying. And I'm not going to be bitter about it. I'm not going to let it ruin me. I'm going to take the positive experiences and walk away. Again, this is one of the reasons I really dug hanging out with this guy for a few days on the island, is he's got the perfect mentality for somebody who is in his spot, and it's something that everybody below him should adopt.
Right. Yeah, he's a cool guy. It's cool listening to him, listen to all the advice that he has, all the knowledge that he has.
Yeah, and I like his plans, too, of like, okay, what can I do? Well, I'm seeing this space open up where now a bunch of other people are doing it, so I'm going to actually use the fact that they're biting off me to help me out by creating a network and bring them into it.
Right.
I'm hoping his whole thing about aggregating a bunch of sports comedy podcasts, we'll do the same thing. We'll just aggregate all the comedy podcasts under our banner, Dave, and then we'll just start marketing them. That's how we'll become successful.
Are there comedy podcasts?
There might be one or two comedy podcasts.
There's some science podcasts we could probably get into. Sciencepassion.com?
God damn it.
It was kind of interesting to me that he never actually directly answered a question of how much of a bump he got after appearing on Rogan.
Oh, I'm sure he got so much. Dude, Rogan's crazy. I mean, you're talking like 500,000 subscribers, I think, much less actual people who listen. And that's just a nuts audience, too. There are other people like Marin or Carolla who may beat him in the numbers on a regular basis. I don't know if they do or not, but sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. Their fan base is not nearly as strong.
Right.
Joe Rogan's podcast fan base will follow you
for sure.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
And so guys like him, I mean, there are entire guys, Ari Shaffir, Duncan Trussell, a lot of those guys basically got famous because they went on Joe Rogan's podcast or became a regular on his podcast.
Right.
So he's got these super supportive listeners who will back you. And again, that's how I found out. Like I said, that's how I found out about Sam Tripoli. I was a Rogan guy. I was listening to Rogan, heard him come on, and was like, oh yeah, way to go. So Rogan really is like a huge culture maker. He determines what's going on in this culture, especially what's going on in comedy, how people talk about comedy. I mean, Joe Rogan has brought comedy language to your average non-comedian, where you can talk to them about featuring or headlining an opener or a host or something, and people know what you're talking about because of Joe Rogan. So, I mean, in a way, he's changed the lexicon of the way non-comedians talk about comedy, sometimes the way comedians talk about comedy.
A couple of years ago, it was actually sort of a goal of mine, like milestone would be like, okay, I would love to be a guest on Joe Rogan's podcast.
Everybody would love to be a guest on
that
Joe
ship
Rogan's
has
podcast.
Sailed though.
Oh yeah,
that's long gone. Like guys like me have no fucking chance at that.
No way.
Yeah, a couple years ago maybe, but now like forget it.
Yeah, I mean, even Sam was saying how it's hard for him to get back on now because of all the work Joe does, and to be honest, more power to you, because I can't think of somebody who is at least comes off in such a way as being a nicer or better person who deserves that. Because I think if you give that power to your average person, especially your average comedian, they'd be a huge fucking asshole.
Right.
So it's good to have like one of those few people who seems like they're pretty level-headed and can deal with it and wield that power well.
I did have I guess the closest I'll ever get is I got mentioned on his podcast.
Did you?
A friend of mine showed me the clip. I don't listen to podcasts because they're just too long. Like, he goes for like a couple hours, whatever. But
honestly, sitting here listening to this with you is probably the longest you've ever listened to our podcast.
I have tuned out a little bit. No, but I have a weird in with Joe Rogan. I got his old isolation tank from him.
Did you really?
In a contest he had. I'd met him a couple times, spoken to him briefly, really cool guy. And then I entered this contest and I won his isolation tank. And it was
so really, you have a float tank in your apartment?
Had. This is when I was married and I had a condo and we kept it in the garage. It took him like a year to have it delivered to me, which was also fucking cool. He fucking paid to have it delivered,
nice.
Had it set up, fucking sent it to me. Now, at the time, my marriage was just beginning to crumble.
That's because you didn't have a float tank.
No, so we got the float tank. We used it a little bit, but it was... I probably could have used it a lot more.
Yeah.
But I just didn't. And eventually got to the point where the HOA at our condo association started sending us letters. You guys are sapping electricity. It could leak, whatever. Because it has to be on all the time.
Oh.
Like, it's constantly plugged in and drawing power. It has to maintain temperature. It's always filled with water. So finally, eventually, we just had to get rid of it. And Joe Rogan, a friend of mine, had showed me this particular, like 2 hours into one of his podcasts. He talks about the contest. He gave the tank away. And he mentions they gave it to, like, I don't know, some guy who's a wannabe stand-up comedian.
Oh, nice.
And let's make no mistake about it. Wannabe, in that context, is definitely intended as an insult. He does not think highly of me, very clearly. Because he mentioned about how I didn't use it very often. And he's like, well, you know, he's going through divorce, so maybe whatever, blah, blah. But yeah, it's just this wannabe comic guy. Because anybody who goes and tells jokes on a regular basis, you're a comic.
Yeah.
Saying wannabe in front of it is just kind of insulting.
Well, you were insulting his tank by not using it, so he was just going quid pro quo on you.
That is true.
I think it would be great if from now on you just commented on all the horrible things professional comedians have said about you. I think that should be our new bit.
That should be our new podcast.
Let's see if we can get Sam Tripoli to say anything bad about you. Let's go back and see what Sam has to say on San Nicolas Island.
Let me change gears here for one sec. Before we did the show tonight, we were all having dinner together, and we were doing something that I find myself doing every single week. We were sitting around talking shit and gossiping. I'm not going to say about who, but I do it all the time. And by the way, I don't like it when someone is always, you ever been talking shit, and there's the wet blanket, like, hey man, that's not cool, that guy really works hard, like, who the fuck are you?
Yeah, that's usually me, I'm the one saying that.
Get the fuck out of here! Like, when you're talking shit, like, there's no mics on, we're not on TV, if you don't have anything mean to say, don't say anything at all.
Because well, there is something to it, but there's also something to, there's always that guy that gets negative really quickly, fast, and it's just like, you're like... Man, we're in the comedy game. We're in the laugh game. It's like you gotta have fun, but it is fun when you find a couple people. You gotta find some people you can bitch to.
Yeah,
and then you gotta be like smiley faces all the other time.
Right, because right here, right now, I have to say I'm really psyched for every guy and his success. But as soon as that mic goes off, I'm like, fuck that hack and his mischievous ways.
I just learned that like I've never changed anything by shit talking.
No, but
and I've always tried to, in a weird way. There's a little bit of wanting to. Now listen, dude, I'm not like a tiptoe through the tulips, kumbaya dude, you know, but there is a little bit of wanting to poison the well of the person you're talking to. Meaning if you just kind of take a little heat off their fastball, you poison their well, you take a little heat off what they're doing, like you showed, oh, look how wrong they are. Like, oh, yeah, they are wrong. And it's like, the truth of the matter is, I've never changed one thing. Talking shit. No, one ever heard me talk
shit. And you never will, but don't you think there's at least some good part of it where it's a little bit cathartic when you're sitting on information about someone who everyone's like, isn't this guy a great YouTube star? You're like, I know, he's a piece of shit. Just to get it off your chest, like, you know that about him too? I thought I was the only one. Ugh.
You just gotta find somebody you can shit talk with.
That's important, I
think.
Listen,
man, there's a reason why they have confession, because you gotta get off. There's a reason why almost every murder is solved because somebody can't keep the secret to themselves.
And that is important, I think. There needs to be a little dinner where there's no mics, there's no cameras, where you're all just like, just getting the shit off your chest. Didn't they have some value?
At the comedy store, they had to regulate periscoping.
Oh,
because people are just walking up and periscoping. You'd be talking, you'd be just talking shop, and you'd be like, oh, dude, I'm on periscope. It's like, who the fuck are you, the periscope? You can't just periscope. You gotta let people know you're periscoping.
Because there's a reason why we do this in the safety of diners, before the show. It's because we don't want to burn bridges, you know? You won't have this problem the way me and Bobby do, but we would hate to be opener and feature, and all of a sudden, like, so-and-so heard what you said on the podcast on Periscope there, and you're gone.
Dude, that happens. I have this podcast called the International Bad Boys Hour, and it's not as big as I want it to be. It's slowly grown, but it's a really great storytelling podcast. But man, once in a while, we just talk some comedy shop, and we just start, we go unfiltered, and then, like, that person comes up to me at the conference, go, what the fuck, dude?
Yeah.
Or my buddies be like, my girlfriend listens to that fucking podcast,
right?
And they fuck it. I'm like,
it's never them that listens, by the way. It's always somebody else
exactly.
telling
you. You know what it is? I hate this. It's not, I listen to your podcast because I'm a fan. It's, someone forwarded me your podcast.
Oh, dude, people do that all the time. With
oh, so a shit talker that wanted to stir the fucking drink, huh?
I call them snitches.
Yeah.
It's so funny. One time I was talking about, Brian Redband was fucking this porn star, and he was eating her butt. She shit in his mouth, and I just
oh
I
my.
Said her name, and he goes, "Dude, what the fuck, man? I'm trying to dare." I go, "Dude, you do joke about her on stage, talking about how you ate her butt. And she shit in your mouth." Well, dude, I don't do it on a podcast. I'm like, what are you talking about, dude? So. On the podcast, on the International Bad Boys, we have a rule, which is you don't give out other people's secrets.
Yeah, okay. That's good. And we try to adhere to that here, too.
Yeah, and so like with the shit-talking, here's my deal. If there's a bunch of people all saying, yeah, this guy screwed me, this guy screwed me, this guy screwed me, great. That's a great shit-talking time. But I always try and put myself in the position. Like, take Rogan, for example. I don't know the guy personally. I've listened to hundreds of hours of him, on the internet. I think he's probably a pretty damn cool guy. But imagine if nobody had met Rogan, hadn't seen his, hadn't listened to his podcast. They just knew him from Fear Factor. He came into a restaurant. He was having a shitty day, and he was curt with a waiter once. That waiter then goes away from that experience and tells everybody they meet that Joe Rogan is the biggest asshole on earth. And that's what gets to me about the shit talking is if you have a basis, great, and especially if it's an agreed upon basis where everybody's like, oh, he did that to you, he did that to me too.
That was where I see the value in it. Now there's the other side, and I want to ask you guys both this question. After we went left from that dinner, we were just, you know, gossiping like little girls, fuck it. I went home, I turned on to my room, I turned on the TV, there was some comedy on, and there was people that we were talking on the TV. And I thought about this. Do you guys remember a time before we started all this, before we peeked behind the curtain about show business? Like, do you ever regret that we have to do that?
Before you saw the Oz, huh?
Before you had to know all this shit about so many entertainers.
Oh, I wish I could enjoy watching comedy.
Yeah, but remember when you had to
say,
hey, it's the funny fat guy. Oh, it's the funny midget. Oh, it's the funny black guy. He made me laugh on Saturday Night Live. Now, when we watch it, sometimes I'm like, that guy fucked over my friend. I heard that guy's a fucking joke thief. That guy a sociopath. That's all I'm thinking,
hey, man,
and I miss it.
I gotta tell you something. You are gonna drive yourself crazy.
It's already happened.
See, the problem with it, what you're thinking, and it was me a long time ago, is you are holding comedy up as this precious, loving thing, when you gotta realize that the reality of the situation is comedy is a filthy whore.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sell out to the fucking who's got the best dollar. And it's like, as soon as you understand that,
oh,
dude,
I understand it, and that's my problem.
But here's the thing, dude. It's just like, if you, there's a million things going on. There's a million things you're focusing on this. And I understand what you're saying about, like, oh, that guy's a fucking cheater, or that guy did this, or that guy does that. If all you're focusing on is that, and I'm not saying you do it all the time, but this conversation, it seems like that. You're gonna drive yourself crazy, dude.
I know, and that's my problem. That's where I wish
you
I could get
focus
away from.
On the, what the
I wish I could go back
on.
To that innocent thing where I could be like, "It's the funny fat guy. I don't care who he is."
That's why I don't watch it. If it drives you crazy, don't watch it. You know what I learned, man? And it was very hard to learn, but especially at the Comedy Store, where shit kind of changed and things were said to me that I was like, "Jesus, I can't believe somebody who was my friend would say that shit to me." I just realized, you know, it was told to me in recovery is that. Someone else's opinion of you is none of your fucking business. And
mm-hmm.
it's such a hard fucking thing to hear, but it's so fucking true. And when you realize that and you stop caring what other people think, it's such a freeing place to be. Like, there's a very elitist thing going on in comedy in L.A., and I used to really focus on how much that is going on. It's like this weird elitism with a little bit of, like, dick sucking. There's a lot of dick sucking going on.
Mm-hmm.
There's some
elite
dick sucking going on. Like, dudes are sucking dicks figuratively, and it's unbelievable to watch, and it sucks, and I don't want to be a part of that. So I just kind of go,
you
know what? I don't need to do that. I don't need to. You know, there's a lot of people who are trying to get in the Comedy Store, Laugh Factory, and they just go crazy because they can't get picked up there. And I go, there are people who become multi-gazillionaires in Hollywood that have never done a set at the Comedy Store, have never done a set at the Laugh Factory. There's nothing, one thing you have to get in.
Yeah.
That is going to make you.
My favorite part about that clip is the mixture of literally sage-like advice that he's giving and also psychologically pinpointing Ryan having known him less than 4 hours.
Oh, I love that it was like a Ryan Shore's therapy session. That was fantastic to me.
I love that he got in and he's like, listen, man, the whole problem with what you're saying, you just have the wrong attitude. Here's what you need to do.
I love Shore's, too, being like, I know that's my problem. I just can't.
This is who I am.
So good. So good. But yeah, I mean, I get on board with that too. It's very cathartic to be able to be like, this guy's a piece of shit.
Yeah.
This guy's a piece of shit. This guy takes shortcuts. This guy, because, you know, it's just, there is, in one of the earlier clips, I think you guys mentioned how comedy is not boxing. It's not you,
yes,
versus other comics. But sometimes it feels that way.
Right.
I mean, yeah, in a perfect world, we'd all be successful. In reality, there's not room for that many comics. And so you do have to compete for time and compete for spots. So I get that mentality of like, oh, this guy doesn't deserve it.
I don't know. I almost feel like at some point people are saying, I want this piece of the pie. And so if you take a bigger piece, then I get a smaller piece. And at some point I feel like yelling, bake your own fucking pie. Like if there's not enough time for you, go make your own show where you get as much time as you want. You know, I love what he was saying in his attitude of just like, man, you got to let whatever anybody else is doing be their own thing. And anybody can say that,
but here's a
fucking dude who does it, yeah, and is successful.
That, if I could take that piece of advice,
right,
and incorporate it in my life, like other people's opinion of you doesn't mean anything, I would be so much happier. Oh my God.
And like, look, you know, like I said, anybody sitting at home doing nothing, anybody can say that. This is somebody who has built a career on being able to do it. And so he's giving you solid advice from the perspective of like, listen, everybody feels this way. Everybody wants to talk shit. Everybody feels the same way you do. The people who are successful are the ones who can get over that feeling.
Right.
It's not like you're a bad person or you're a shitty comic or you're not a good dude for feeling that way. We all feel it. It's just whether or not you can go past it.
Right. And how much you let it affect you.
Right. And the talking shit thing, I totally get. Like, I am the first person to probably be the guy Ryan hates who's like, hey, come on, guys. That's probably a nice guy. Like, that's kind of my role. But I won't do it necessarily for somebody who doesn't deserve it. So, like, you know, there are people who are well known for screwing over other comedians for things like bringer shows, and they're well known throughout San Diego. I'm never going to come up and be like, hey, guys, stop talking shit about that person. That's a good guy, or you just don't get him or something. I'll jump right in and be like, yeah, that guy fucked me too. Or even if he didn't, yeah, I've heard he screwed over a lot of comedians.
Yeah.
Because I think that helps people. That is you letting other people know, hey, stay away from this guy. Hey, if you haven't heard about him, he'll screw you over. Hey, back off. I think there's a difference between that and then just talking shit for talking shit's sake.
Well, it's a fine line because for every person that we could sit here and agree, that person's a piece of shit, they fuck people over.
Yeah.
They're going to have an equal amount of comics who defend them and say, no, he's
not
a good
not
person.
An equal. The people I'm talking about will not have an equal amount of comics defending
disagree
them.
Disagree because there are a shit ton of horrible people in comedy. And it's like the bad side and the good side maybe have pretty equal numbers. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it could be. I mean, I think there's a difference between like, you know, people will get on a shit-talking spree because, you know, that guy, I opened for that guy and he didn't spend a lot of time hanging out with me. Who knows, man? Maybe he was fucking going through a breakup right then. Like, maybe he was talking to his wife on the phone. Maybe his kid had a bad day at school. Who knows what's going on with that guy at that given point? That's a difference. There's a difference between that and this guy is stealing jokes. This guy is ripping off other
comics. Habitually bad behavior. I agree.
Yeah. And I think that's my distinction. Are you doing something that's actually wrong, or is it something that's like, who cares? Or this is a matter of perspective, or maybe you had a bad fucking day. And I love Sam's attitude. Sam has the best fucking attitude, which is, don't worry about that. I used to worry about that. It didn't do me any good. Not worrying about it does do me good, and it'll get you going a lot further.
Yeah.
And it also helps, too, because quite frankly, sometimes you are wrong. Sometimes you have a bad experience with somebody, and you're wrong, and if you got pissed, you would burn that bridge, but then you run into them a month and a half later, and they could become your best friend or your best contact in comedy because you didn't burn that bridge.
Right. And it kind of goes hand in hand, too, with what he was saying. Like, if you don't get up at the Comedy Store, so what?
Yeah.
You don't need every, like, those are all, those are all goals that everybody has,
yeah,
but you don't need all that shit. Sometimes you don't need any of it. It's great to have it, But you don't need that.
That was, I think, actually the most powerful message in that thing, which was, hey, we keep saying you have to have these benchmarks, but this is not being a surgeon. You don't need to go to medical school. You don't need to go do your residency. You don't need to do this. The great thing about comedy is you can be incredibly successful by just being good at it. Like, think right. of that. That's one of the only jobs that are like that. Most jobs, you need to make these milestones. In comedy, you don't. So if you don't get that headlining spot at the Comedy Store, who cares? Guess what? Neither did Daniel Tosh, and now he's got a fucking TV show. Like, what does it matter if you can find another way? So don't focus on those milestones. Focus on your goals. You know, I think that's in the end what he's saying. If you want to be a great podcaster, start doing fucking podcasts. If you want to be a great stand-up comic, hit a bunch of open mics. You can be a great stand-up comic without being a headliner at the Comedy Store.
Right. It's really, really hard work, but you can find your audience.
Yeah.
Without even having to use all the traditional means that everyone else does.
I mean, look at Sam. Sam's a great example of that. He went out and found this this comedy sports audience. He started a whole genre. He did all this, and he's got a huge following because of it. And he's a national touring headliner because he can base himself off those. Now, he did get to headline at the Comedy Store, but there's no rule that said he had to get to where he
right.
is.
And it probably was pretty much irrelevant to his podcast.
Right, right, right. And you know what's so funny is we were just talking to a few new comedians last night at our show, and there was some who the first questions they asked me was like, oh, have you headlined here yet? Have you done that? And I was like, no, I'm not. That's not where I am. I'm not definitely not headlining at the Comedy Store or any of those places right now. But I'll tell you, I am doing what I want to do in comedy. You know, I get to do podcasts. I get to go do stand-up shows every once in a while. I should probably do more of them. But nobody is stopping me from getting what I want in comedy. And I think too many people have the idea in their head, man, this guy's in my way. This booker will never let me get to where I need to go. And it's right. like, no, man, that is you. That is all you. If they're not going to let you in their club, fuck their club. There's 100 other clubs in this right. country. Go to there. If nobody's letting you in their club, fuck clubs. Get your computer going and get on YouTube and get some fans out on the internet. Whatever it is, that's on you. And there's nobody who can put a barrier in front of you in comedy because there's nobody who can stop you from logging onto the internet.
Right. Yeah, and that's, like, in a perfect world, it would be nice if, like, he was talking about the booker at that one club and what a bitch she is.
Right.
In a perfect world, it would be great if, like, the entire community would be like, oh, she's a bitch? Well, fuck that club.
Yeah.
But that's never going to happen because there's always going to be thousands of people who'll be like, oh, I'll do it.
Oh, if there's an audience, I'll do it. Yeah. You know, like, that's the way it is. There's no scruples about that.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
we're gonna go out. That's what we do. That's the whole point. That is your journey. And if you ignore all those people who you think are going to be in your way, they won't be in your way.
Right.
All right. This has been a fun one. We still have like a another half hour, so let's come on back next week. We'll take a look at some of the other Sam Tripoli stuff. He actually gets into some pretty decent detail on some interesting stuff going on in San Diego, but we're just going to go over time. So let's cut this up into two episodes, and we'll see you back here next week. Sound good, Dave?
Awesome.
All right. Thanks for joining us, guys. See you next week.
The Twos is cruising without us.
I'd like to see the dead man who tries. Yeah, time passing by. Motherfucking time is passing.